Good morning, everyone. I think we have a quorum, so let's take our seats. It is now 9:01. We'll now begin today's Dallas City Council meeting. To start, good morning. It's my pleasure to introduce Pastor Daryl Carter with the Carver Heights Baptist Church. Located in Dallas, Carver Heights has stood as a beacon of light and hope for the Dallas community. Carver Heights is a long-standing tradition with four pastors leading the congregation over the past 61 years. And Pastor Carter was ordained in 1996, I believe, in various capacities since joining the Carver Heights family in May of 2004. Thank you, Pastor Carter, for being with us, and maybe you can pray for some rain and some cool weather.
Shall we pray? Dear Heavenly Father, we come once more and again. We come to Heavenly Father in the most humble way we know how. We come to just to say thank you just for another day's journey. And Lord, I come right now praying a special blessing upon the city of Dallas. Not only upon the city of Dallas, but I ask that you will bless our council members and bless our mayor right now. Lord, I ask that you would bless him in a special way. Not only him, but bless his family and wrap them with your arms of protection. And then, Lord, I pray that you will bless the business that is at hand today. But Lord, we need you in a mighty way. We need your blessings right now. We need the rain right now. We need you to shower us with your blessings. And we just say thank you. Now, Lord, I ask that you bless every person that's represented here right now. No matter who they are, where they come from, I just ask that you would just touch them. These blessings that I ask in the name of Jesus, we pray, and we ask it all. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor. Councilman Griggs, would you lead us in the pledge of allegiance? So good morning, and let us begin with our recognitions. Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins, I think you're up first.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Blessed morning, right?
Yes, it is. It's going to rain today. Somewhere in the world. The third annual Evening Class was held on June the 7th at Paul Quinn College campus. It features the Dallas Symphony Orchestra for a lovely outdoor concert. If you miss it, you miss a great treat. But we have some pictures to speak in your interest for the next year. I'd like to thank Amar Golden for coming, and I hope you had a great time while you were there. Thank you. You know, the key is with this picture here that you see, you know, picture means many things that we sometimes do not wonder what is going on in the Southern Sector. This project started 3 years ago, and we said within 4 years we would have the Dallas Central Oxy there, and it was there in 3 years. And one thing, you know, I got to think up front is Michael Sorrell of Paul Quinn College, who's been the host for this for the last 3 years. And to see the people there competing against the Dallas Mavericks. Dallas Mavericks. We're competing against the Dallas Mavericks. We had over 500 people showing up all across the city. And they showed up. Same time to game time. So that was a great treat in itself. Now, none of this would have been possible without the hard work committed and the sponsor of Walmart, Radio One Dallas, Apple Energy, Paul Quinn College, the Office of Cultural Affairs, and WRR Radio and the Dallas Central Orchestra. Thank you all for your contribution, either in kind or through donations to this event. Each couple had a beautiful plaque and appreciation that said more than this. But I will not read all the quotes on the plaque, but they differ. To the Dallas Central Orchestra, music speaks what cannot be expressed, soothe the mind and give it rest, heal the heart and make it whole, flow from heaven to the soul, author unknown. Thank you for blessing the city of Dallas with such beautiful music. To Walmart, who found the words are the most appropriate to explain what Walmart had taken to heart. Operation Global, Give Back Local, Sam Walter. We appreciate all that you do in the community and your commitment to the leadership from the inside out. To Paul Quinn College, we have an obligation and a responsibility to be invested in our students and our schools. We must make sure that people who have the grades, the desire, and the will, but not the money, can still get the best education possible. President Barack Obama, Michael Sorrell has worked diligently to make sure this is a reality. Paul Quinn College was our host for this event. As you can see from the pictures, Paul Quinn College grounds are beautiful. To Atman Energy, we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give, once the church here. They have been this evening from the inception has been dedicated to the quality education and cultural program, which make them a wonderful fit for this event. Thank you so much, Ackman Energy. Last of all, I want to highlight the Office of Cultural Affairs and WRR Radio. Without their guidance and support, we would not have events such as this, along with the appointees, Faye Gaffer, I don't know if Faye is here or not, who helped to make this event a reality. Could the representative please come forward to receive your plaque and the accolades? Also, I'd like to thank my staff, Shanice and Teresa, and all other city staff who helped prepare this great event at Paul Quinn College. As you see, this event was a great event, and this event the showcase of the Southern Sector on Paul Quinn College. And Mike, I hope next year we come forward, please. And Michael Sorrell had been a host. He had been a great host of this event for the last 3 years. And you want to say something?
We just want to say, first of all, thank you to Councilman Atkins, or Mayor, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins, for supporting us in this event. It took absolutely no arm twisting at all to get him behind the vision and jumped in, and his team jumped in, and it really is a wonderful sight to see the entire 80-piece orchestra playing a free concert on our campus, and to see the students, to see the neighborhood, to see people from all over the city come down and partake in the opportunity is just special. And thank you also to the symphony, to Cynthia Hinojosa, who can't be here this morning, but has been a tireless advocate for this type of program. Thank you to Atmos. Thank you to Walmart. Thank you to everyone who has participated, and we just look forward to seeing everyone again next year.
Thank you. Thanks. Captain Imogen, will you come forward, please?
As always, we take pride in everything we do. We love to partner with any of you in any of your districts, and it's always a pleasure. So on behalf of Atmos Energy, thank you for the recognition.
David Fisher.
This is a great pleasure to do this event all 3 years, and it's been such a great thing to see this event grow and grow, and to see the engagement of the people in District 8 and all over the city, and it was a great event to be a part of. Thank you.
And also David Kamer.
Hi, I'm Debbie Tanya with the Symphony, and one of our main goals is to reach out across the community, and we were just thrilled to be able to do this concert and take our beautiful music to the community. So, thank you.
And also Stephen Nash from Radio 1, will you come forward and say a few words?
Excuse my tardiness. On behalf of Radio 1 Dallas, I would just like to say that we really appreciate District 8's Antonelle Atkins and the rest of the City Council, and we look forward to doing whatever we can do for the community. If you need us, we're there. Thank you so much for letting us be a part of your event.
Is Nikki Miller here from Walmart? I guess not. So that's it. Thank you.
Councilman Allen, we're still having some folks come in. Do you want to, is your recognition here?
We'll,
all right, why don't we skip to you? Oh, excuse me.
Paul Quinn?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to say a word about Paul Quinn, if you will permit me to do so. Mr. Atkins, please accept all of our thanks for continuing to recognize the hard work that President Sorrell and that staff does at Paul Quinn. Everyone under the sound of my voice is aware that Paul Quinn has been to the brink, but it is because of people like you, Councilman Atkins, and the people who are standing here who have brought that educational institution back. It is an old institution. It is a religious-based institution. It is an institution that takes kids who cannot go anywhere else and transforms them into the leaders, the entrepreneurs that lead this country and the world. Thank you, Mr. Atkins, for the recognition. Thank all of you sponsors. Thank you, President Sorrell, for all that you have done for this historic, unique, and absolutely necessary institution. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. And I want to echo the comments. Thank you, Michael, for your leadership and all the sponsors for that. Appreciate it. Councilman Allen?
Councilman Atkins, can you stay up here with me? And Councilman Carraway, would you be so kind to come up here? All right. What we've got here, we're going to do a little proclamation. Well, we're going to do a proclamation. What we're going to talk about is my brother's keeper. My brother's keeper. My brother's keeper. And this goes right to the heart, Councilwoman Hill, of what you preach every Sunday, my brother's keeper, and it's about being mentors. I'm going to read a quick proclamation. It's going to give you an idea of what this is. And gentlemen, if it's all right, I'll just read it all the way through. It's kind of short and sweet. Here we go. And where at?
Wildcats.
How about them Wildcats? Yeah. Y'all going to get used to it. Y'all get used to it. Anyway, whereas too many of our young adults drop out of school, and whereas too many of our young adults live in prison instead of a college dorm because of a lack of a positive role models to turn to, and whereas June Jones, head football coach of the SMU Mustangs, strongly believes these trends must end, and whereas with this vision in mind, Coach June Jones, along with the leadership team of former NFL great Daniel Buggs, the renowned sports marketeer Aaron Patton and senior pastor Joe Martin of Trinity Church of North Dallas. My Brother Keeper was established to serve the youth of Dallas-Fort Worth through mentoring and messages of hope, while creating an alliance between mentoring programs and ministries in the Metroplex. And whereas My Brother's Keeper's mission is to unite, galvanize, and increase the number of quality mentors by providing guidance, resources, and programs that an army of mentors can deliver a sustainable and measurable impact to our youth, focusing on character development, leadership, and discipline, thus touching the very souls of our youth. Now, therefore, I, Michael S. Rollins, Mayor of the City of Dallas, and on behalf of the Dallas City Council, do hereby proclaim August 7, 2011, as My Brother's Keeper's Day. I mentioned the gentleman's name in here, Aaron Patton. Aaron, would you be so kind to come up now?
Come on, Aaron.
Aaron is one of the really guiding force at SMU, one of the guiding force behind being getting this up and going. In just a second, we're going to ask Aaron to kind of give us a little background. But, Councilman Carraway,
mm-hmm.
When I talk about mentors, you're kind of an expert on that, aren't you?
Well, let me just say one very quick thing.
Give him that man the microphone.
There you go. Thank you.
Give him a hat.
My hair's on.
You look good, buddy. You look good.
the most important thing that we have in front of us here in this city and our greatest challenge are our kids. And our kids, it is very important that we have mentors so that they can follow in suit of positive things that are out here awaiting them in the world. I'm so very pleased that Councilman Allen and Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins have chose to recognize you and to ask me to even be a part. We're in search of more mentors, and we certainly appreciate and extend the fact that we need you, and you're just the beginning. But we have to keep on because we're on a mission. We're on a mission to make sure that our children are in our world and in this world moving forward in the most positive way behind folks that are so committed as yourself. Councilman.
All right. Councilman Atkins. This, again, Councilman Atkins, for many of y'all that y'all already know this, but he's a former star at SMU and at one time was the world's fastest human in the high hurdles while at SMU. So, but more important than that, too, these last years and such, Councilman Atkins has been, he's been the lead front man when it comes to working with SMU and developing just last year. How many kids did you help coordinate?
Last year, you know, Jerry, with your help, with all the counselor help, we brought in 15,000 students to SMU as mentors. They did not go to the football game. They saw the counselor and also experienced the college history. And by doing that, that's why it's very important with Jerry and Dwayne, with the kids. The kids is our future. And with the institution like we got at SMU, we want to be in a partnership with the city of Dallas, the entire city, to make sure that education is number one on the list. And also, Delahousa, you know, SMU alumni and Von Steele, Joan Hill, you know, we all here together, and we all the Wildcats, we all won. But, and Roosevelt Mustang is, I'm getting a Mustang here, okay, but he's a Mustang though, right?
Texas Southern University.
So we all won, you know, but we all need to be mentors for all the children today and to make sure Dallas was a great place to stay.
There you go. Mr. Patton, would you give us a quick overview of what's going to happen this Sunday?
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's a blessing to be amidst our great leadership in the city. So I want to thank Councilman Allen for his leadership, Councilman Carraway for your heart, for your mission and purpose here, and Deputy Mayor Pro Tem, Councilman Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins, for his leadership in serving as chairperson for our Bus Brigade campaign which was very successful, as he alluded to. So, and Mayor Rawlings, for his leadership, we want to recognize and thank you for what you mean to our young people in this city. And I'm accepting this today on behalf of my partner in crime, Coach June Jones, who's running around the football field in some sweats right now with the boys and couldn't be here. But this was his vision. He took a trip to Israel this past winter and got a vision from the Lord to come here to the state of Texas and the city of Dallas, recognizing that he came here from Hawaii to do more than win football games, but to win the hearts and the minds of our young people. And so he and I partnered up for My Brother's Keeper. It's a huge crusade that's taking place this weekend at SMU inside Ford Stadium at 5:30 p.m. It's a life-changing, transformational event that young people are going to experience. We've got former NFL players, Dallas's own Tim Brown. Anyone know Tim Brown? Woodrow Wilson High School Heisman Trophy winner. Greg Hill from Carter High School. If you saw Friday Night Lights, you know about Greg Hill. But more than their accomplishments on the field, off the field, they walk the walk. And on that day, we're asking mentors to show up. Just as our government is tackling a very huge deficit problem, we know that we have a deficit right here in our community in terms of mentors and access to quality mentors that can build character into these young men. Young men like myself who were raised in a single-parent household. My mom raised three boys, and with her strength, her guidance, her wisdom, my faith, we were able to see beyond our environment. And she taught us not to be products of our environment, but products of our imagination. So I am part Wildcat. I went to Northwestern University undergrad, but got my business degree. Go Cat. And was able to continue and got my business degree from the Cox School of Business at SMU. And so I'm living proof that anything is possible, but it would not have been possible in my life, without the Lord first, and also with men who built character into me, coaches like June Jones, who believe that sports is a vehicle to reach our youth and to build character. So I invite you all to join us this Sunday at 5:30, and very importantly, through the kind and generous donations from some of our donors, we have free transportation. We know that a lot of our young people cannot access transportation, so we have free air-conditioned charter buses for schools, youth mentoring organizations, or churches. So if any of you are interested in taking advantage of that, I'll just quickly leave you a number you can call, which is 214-868-0298. That's 214-868-0298. So it's going to be a lot of fun. They'll hear the testimonies. We've got some performances, some gospel hip-hop artists, some other gospel artists as well. So please do join us in supporting our youth. And again, thank you. And also the website is mbkcrusade.org, mbkcrusade.org. And so this is just the beginning. We're starting here in Dallas, but this will be a national effort. And I'll say this quickly in closing, as Councilman Allen mentioned. The other thing we realize is that there is a lot of great work that's happening in our community. And so My Brother's Keeper, in addition to just this event, because we don't want to just have an event and everyone goes home and we wonder where the impact is. So we've created a model where we're going to unite the ministries, we're going to unite the youth mentoring organizations, and My Brother's Keeper will serve as a catalyst organization and an umbrella organization to facilitate cooperation, to facilitate training and development of mentors, and to take this national, much the same as Promise Keepers did for the mainstream. We're aiming that squarely at our kids in the inner city. So thank you very much again for your time.
I think we ought to pass the hat. What do you think?
Yeah.
But if we could be so kind, I would love to get the entire city council a picture with this, so that showing that we support what's going on, so that we can have that. And so the entire city council, Mr. Mayor, can come up, and then we'll take those right here.
We'll put these right here.
Yeah, we'll get those right here.
those down for you. I will take the next opportunity to do the last recognition of the this morning. Tomorrow morning, starting about 6 o'clock, it sounds like to me, we're going to have students from Dallas Independent School District lining up at the State Fair's Centennial and Automobile Building to wait to get in when the doors open at 8 o'clock to get an amazing amount of resources for themselves. As you know, I think education is going to be the foundation of this city, and we must have our kids prepared and ready for school. Dallas has created a tradition in the mayor's back-to-school fair that I think is premier in the country. I don't think there's anything like it in the United States, and I think it's something we should be very proud of. Starting 14 years ago, we are equipping these children with free dental work, immunizations, free haircuts, boxes of school supplies, and all you have to do is go to Dallas Independent School District and make sure that you qualify from a financial standpoint, because these are for our most needy kids. I think it's amazing that we're going to have almost 40,000 people at this event. I mean, think about it. There's not a lot of events where 40,000 people come out. And I am so proud of everybody. Thank you for DISD for partnering with us and making sure that these kids get the quality school supplies that they need. Now, one of the ways that this becomes a reality is for companies to reach out and say, I want to participate in better education in our kids. And I think it's an amazing fact that we've been able to raise almost $200,000 of cash and tens of thousands of dollars of more goods and services to the city. And that is only happening because people say this is important. I think special recognition goes to Walmart. Walmart again on this. They have since opening their first store in 1962. Walmart has become a huge company, and a company that's going to be important as we grow forward. So I'd like Nikki Miller and Kelly Durer to come up with Walmart. You're here. Their charitable contributions, a variety of issues in education, environment, health, and human services. We appreciate your help and everything that you've done. Since 2009, they've given $53 million to fund education, and we look forward to some of that money in the future coming our way. Now, stay right here, baby. Stay right here, okay? Yeah, well, that future thing, she said. thank you for being the presenting sponsor of the 15th annual Mayor's Back to School. Also, we would like to recognize J.P. Morgan Chase and Ann Mottenbacher and Laura and Kyle and Summer and Michelle. Is Michelle here this morning? I didn't see Michelle. Okay. Well, come on up. As we know, they are a leading global financial firm with assets and operations in 60 countries. We care about what they do in Dallas, and thank you for leading that effort. Chase, I know, believes in education and making sure that the least of these get the resources they need in the schoolroom. So with Chase's participation in the event, they have earned the company status of Back to School Fair's Distinguished Golden Apple Sponsors. Thank you, Ann, for that effort. And then I'd also like to give a big thank you to the other sponsors for making the Mayor's Back to School Fair possible. I know some of you have joined us today, and I'd like to give you a shout-out in that regard. So when I call your name, come on up.
with Fidelity friend, I always said Icart, right? I would say John Bennett with TXU, Bianca Cantu, Zachary Thomas, and Patricia Cook with Dallas County Health and Human Services, an important partner there. Martha Roca and Valerie Lingle with Children's Medical Center. Their documentary starts tonight on television on channel 8, right? Okay. Scott Seamer with the Methodist Medical Center. Lorraine Lee with Dallas Independent School District. Jane Massey, Amber Jefferson, Tasha Heron Bruff, and John Workman with Habitat for Humanity. Ezra Penonarm with Texas Instruments. Dave Mascara and Anita Blaylock Moss with WFAA. Thank you for being our media sponsors. And Holly Brookins and Nicole Phillips with the Green Sheet. We've got Jack Bewley with Yellow Cab. Joe Rivera with All Smiles. He said he's going to be doing, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dental exams tomorrow. Okay. Jim Ramsey with Clean Energy. Randy Elms with Baylor and Cindy Jones with Aetna. And if there's anybody else that's not here, I can't believe it, but come on up.
My barber is here.
What's that?
Fed.
I'm sorry.
Cedric B. the barber.
Okay. Yeah, oh, yeah, the barber. Cedric.
Yeah.
And Action Metal.
I thought I said them.
Yeah.
Action. Did I do that? Carmen Griston? Did I not call Carmen up?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
There you go. Radio One and Coca-Cola. Well, look at this. We can't even get all these people in this room. It's so much support. I think we need to recognize this when we say, will corporations get behind our schools? Here it is. Okay? It's fabulous. So thank you. Now, not only did we get money, but there are hundreds and hundreds of volunteers from the companies that will come out and work with the kids and stand in line. So when we're talking about the financial support, we too often forget about the human element. And I appreciate all of your pass it on to your companies for the personal time. So let's come up here. Let's do a group shot, okay?
You guys can come up here. All right,
we'll get
how about this? I'll get down.
That's a good shot. That's a nice shot.
Okay, thank you all. We'll see you tomorrow.
Colleagues, while everyone is dispersing, I want to make sure that we recognize Curtis King is out in the audience. Curtis, if you'll stand up. Each of us, including Mary, received a CD that was recorded at T-Ball at the Convention Center, and it features the Black Academy Concert, and it has American Idol winner Ruben Studdard and Nesby and Jasmine Guy. It was launched in Indianapolis at a conference of 30,000 people, and the CD will be released on August the 16th. And I think these types of things really promote the city of Dallas. And we know that we've got the winning Mavericks, but we also have a lot of other things here in Dallas. And we want to thank T-Ball and Curtis King for the CD, and I know it's going to bring more recognition to our city. So, Curtis, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Thanks.
Theater Center for their work in that. And the other thing is, if you haven't ridden on your bike down the Santa Fe Trail, I got to do that. That was my first time. So do that. And I think as council members, we need to all kind of advocate. If someone finds something that was a new experience for you, let's talk about it publicly. Okay?
Mayor, could I ask one thing?
Yes, sir.
You want to tell them where we may be going Saturday night? Okay.
No, sir. No, sir. We're not going to. First of all, there's a maybe there.
Thank you. We begin your morning speakers with William Hopkins, followed by Rick Gonzalez. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant at Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. You are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice a timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please stop speaking and allow the next individual their turn. If you will please address your comments to Mayor Rawlings. Please state your name and address for the record.
Okay. My name's William Hopkins. I live at 2011 Lee Street. Mayor, I'd like to first congratulate you on the election. You win an election. I feel that we're going to bring integrity to the city of Dallas with your leadership. Why I'm here today is, Mayor, I've been coming down here around about 15 years, Mayor, for the people of West Dallas. It was an RSR lead plant. It was spewing out lead and arsenic and everything out of this plant. And we went to school right next door. I went to Edison right next door to the lead plant. And from then on, my friends and family is sick and dying, Merle. I have like 3 sheets of paper I'd like for you to look at for me. The first sheet, Mayor, is the former council members and the former mayors had been telling me, you know, William, we didn't have nothing to do with the lead. Could you get it to the mayor for me? Okay. Mayor, I want you to look at it while I speak. But the former council members and the former mayors were telling me that, William, we didn't have nothing to do with the lead. And you coming down here every week and you saying this and you saying that we didn't have nothing to do with it, that it was a law firm, it was a Fred Bauer and Bud law firm that handled the case, that the city didn't have nothing to do with it. So after years and years, this they gave me this letter, Merle, in 1997. After years and years, I finally found the lawsuit from the city, the second page, Merle. The first sheet is where the city was telling us that they didn't have nothing to do with the lead. You can read it later, and I can get back with you. And they didn't have nothing to do with the lead, and it wasn't with the city, and we can call a law firm and get in touch with some law firm and find out what happened with our money. But the second sheet, Merle, is where the city sued the RSR lead plant. The second sheet, what I give you. And I don't want to say that they were lying to me what they was doing. I'm still... It's been 15 years, I ain't figured out what they was doing. But the city did sue, Merle. They gave me a letter saying that they didn't, that's the first sheet, that they didn't have nothing to do with the RSR lead plant. But the second sheet is showing where the city sued the RSR lead plant. And from 97 to now, I have so many friends. My mother passed. I just buried my father May 25th. I had 3 uncles pass. My Aunt Ola passed. So many friends passed, Merle, since they told me that the city didn't have nothing to do with it. But the city did sue, Merle, the RSR lead plant, and the city have our money. And I'm just here asking you, could you help me? I've been coming down here, I took 15 years out of my life to try to get some help for these people, Merle. And I'm here trying to see if you could help me find this money that the city have for these people that's dying in West Dallas. I just buried my father. I don't know what to do, Mayor. I don't know what to do. I got to go to the hospital and see another one of my friends out to Parkland. he about to pass, another friend, and all these classmates. So I don't know when I'm going to die. I done went to so many classmates' funerals. So by them being my classmates, I don't know how long I got it, Merle. Is my time up? Huh? And I was just trying to see if you could help me, Merle. Okay, thank you.
Your next speaker is Rick Gonzalez, followed by Carl McKenzie.
Good morning, Council. Rick Gonzalez, 4283 South Crest Haven, District 14. Mayor, I'm here to introduce myself to yourself and the new council members. For you council members that know me and probably don't want me here, likewise. I'm here to support you, Mayor. I voted for you. I think, like Mr. Hawkins said, you can probably bring some integrity to this room. The greatest challenge of this room is not the children, not the kids. The greatest challenge of this room is to provide the ethics and morals that can lead the kids and lead the future that we need to be on the path of. That's why I voted for you, sir. I went to a candidate forum at Walnut Hill. I thought you were the best candidate. I think if you remember, the Kunkel had made a comment about in his closing statement about not having to drag people away from the podium anymore, that was so upset with the police department. I don't think that was a level of, I don't think that was a bar to achievement. I think that makes it clear that there's a problem here with the Dallas Police Department. I could sit here and talk about the morals and ethics, and I went to an ethics committee here meeting a few months ago. I called the chairman back to see if when it would come to the full council. It was passed. I was never notified. I watched them for an hour. They were so off course. 10 people, and I'll tell them what it cost us, but to try to determine who can donate campaign funds and when is not the problem. If you don't have ethics in your shoes, it doesn't matter what the people are doing outside. So to create guidelines for us to follow is wrong. The problem is not out there. The problem is in here. And as far as the police department, sir, for 14 years, unlike Mr. Hopkins, 15, 14 years, I've stood with my neighbors, I've stood with my family, stood with neighbors throughout Dallas. Sticks, bricks, guns, knives, bats, axe, I've been through that. The whole time I was looking for help from the police, they said, oh, you got to hold crime watch meetings, you need some crime watch meetings. I started holding crime watch meetings, I look up and I got police sneaking around my house. I was safer from the drug addicts. At least you knew that they were bad guys, they come to you, they act like a man. But when you have somebody that's supposed to be supporting you and representing you and sneaking around, that's worse when you have a bad guy that's a good guy. And that's what put me back in school. I'm in college now because the future of the city is not, we're not, we're on the wrong path, Mayor. And when I saw you up there speaking, I thought you were a hope. You were something different. You weren't part of this thing that's going on here. I'm not going to go into details because soon enough you'll know about it. But I do know when it comes to Dallas Police Department, they seem to be not accountable to any of their items, whether it be the general order, whether it be the department code of conduct, whether it be the ethics, or whether it be law enforcement ethics. From the chief police office down to the NPOs, down to the original NPO, if they were contractors, sir, if you had Steve Winchester was a contractor, Cato his roommate was a contractor, they would be the kind of trash that would rummage through somebody's house while Cato would sit out front and watch. That's the experience I have with the Dallas Police Department. The whole time asking for help to protect my family, me, and all my neighbors, and several neighbors. I've worked with neighborhoods throughout Dallas. And there was a time when there was no better person you could stand with than a room full of Dallas Police Department. But in the last few years, I've learned it's different. I used to run from the Dallas Police Department as a teenager, like several people have in this city. There's nothing to run from. They need to be taught a lesson, sir. But when the city manager turns their back on it, and you don't have this clubhouse thing going in this building, it's not helping the citizens out there. So please, sir, if you would, take the time to listen to myself. Take the time to listen to Hopkins. Those of us that are not part of this little group thing that's going on here, we're here. I'm missing school. I don't want to be here, sir. I'm not here to be ugly to nobody. I'm just here to ask for help for the future. I do have a project here that I've worked on in college. I want to share it with you guys. It goes into more detail about my feelings. And as a native of this city, I'm a product of the environment, and I will stand with my neighbors through anything, against anybody. So please, sir, when you feel yourself getting into a slippery slope with some of your colleagues and things, think it through. Because there's a web that comes around you, and the next thing you know, you're caught in it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Carl McKenzie, followed by Brad Kirby. Carl McKenzie, not present. Brad Kirby. Mr. Kirby will be followed by Joanne Lynn.
Good morning. My name is Brad Kirby at 2110 Irving Boulevard. I have some paperwork to hand out there for you. A couple of years and a lot of the city council members know me. I've been here the last 3 years, 3.5 years. I got an ordinance passed a year ago And if you found a stray dog, you must try to find the owner by trying to see if it has a microchip or ID tags. My dogs were stolen here. My dogs were stolen 3 years ago by this man. I finally got a picture of him. The Dallas City Police, or actually Detective Strootman, called these people who stole my dogs Good Samaritans because they took my dogs out of my front yard with ID on them, microchip and tags, and did not return my dogs to me. I started a website called Lost Dogs of Dallas because over 1,000 dogs are stolen every year in Dallas. And I need something to do, something to be done about all these dogs stolen. Now, Detective Strootman, he went out of his way to prove that the dogs were not stolen. He suppressed evidence. He lied as far as what I told him, as far as a victim's statement. He took my statement and turned around backwards. Not that I told him that my dogs were safe at home and on my property. The one main dog that I was complaining about that I never got back was chained up, was secured. I told him that they were secured and the dogs were stolen. He said, your dogs get through this chain that couldn't be bit through by a leash or by a dog and follow the thief home from my house, which is about 2 miles across I-35. My dogs did not follow him home. My dogs were stolen. He suppressed evidence, like I said. He did everything he could to make sure these guys went free and even call them a Good Samaritans even. And these guys aren't not Good Samaritans. They still steal dogs. They break into cars. They're gang members, not Good Samaritans at all. I need you to look at the police department. They've been bragging about how the crime rate has gone down. I believe the crime rate hasn't gone down. They've just been suppressing crimes to make it look like the crime rate has gone down to make sure they get some federal funds out of it. But if you look at the crime rate and look at some of us complaining about it, the crime rate hasn't gone down, I don't think. I think they've just suppressed the evidence and letting the criminals kind of go away free. Now, if it's a murder, kidnapping, yes, they're going to be all over because they got the FBI behind them, too, on that one. But any small crimes, like stealing dogs, number one, breaking in cars, they can suppress evidence and just let it go. Now, I've been harassed by these people, and they threatened my life 5 times. They broke into my car. They stole my other dogs. They're doing other things because they know that the police are not going to go after them. So I need you to step up as a mayor of Dallas and be a man and confront the Dallas Police Department and see why the crime rate has gone down, but we're still complaining about all the crime that's happening to us. Thank you for your time very much, and I'll talk to you later. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Your next speaker is Joanne Roan. Joanne Roan, not present. Ozumba Lunks, not present. Carol Hopkins, not present. Harry Hall.
Good morning. Council, I'm here this morning to talk to you about the homeless problem that we have. Our businesses are suffering horribly, and our neighbors in the community, downtown area. This is a horrible problem where people are being constantly harassed by people that are homeless on the street. They come to your property, they turn over your trash cans, they go through, they leave everything scattered, they walk down the street, they throw down their trash, and it's left up to us to have to clean up their mess. Our patrons are constantly being accosted by people asking for money. I mean, these people are just roaming everywhere. We have women and children in the neighborhood. You have the homeless that are just walking down the street and stop and urinate right in front of everybody. And I mean, women and children are there. This is totally wrong. If this happened to any of you at your house, if your wife or your daughter walked out of the house and there's a guy standing there urinating on the bushes on the side of your house, you would want these people thrown under jail. And we go through this every single day. We see this. It happens right downtown. You see this happening. I mean, they're urinating on the streets and the buildings right downtown here. I mean, this is absolutely horrible. We have people coming into town. They drive down the freeway. They see people under the freeway standing there urinating. You walk right out here sometimes and see people laying on the grass. You have new people come to the city of Dallas, and it's welcome to Dallas. We watch them as you come downtown, you get off the buses, at the bus stops, you're constantly accosted for money, for people saying they want food, but you look around the 15th of each month and you see a constant drug problem. As soon as they get their checks from the government, it is drug buying time. I mean, it is horrible. If you go down St. Paul, you go down on South Irvay Street, they're constantly standing there selling drugs, prostitution. I mean, this is horrible. We need help with the homeless to try to get them. I mean, you issue them certificates to go out and feed the homeless, yet we have a shelter right here. Why can they not feed on their own grounds? This is what we have this for. We don't need these people spread all over town. If you're down on Main Street and you walk down Main Street, you're going to smell urine where they have absolutely urinated on the streets and on the buildings right downtown Dallas. I mean, this is not any way to try to get new businesses for the city of Dallas and to try to keep the ones that we have. We need your help to try to fix this problem. I can only say the only kind of help we can get is going to be through you. And I'm going to say, this is your problem. Fix it for us. Help us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes. Mr. Hall, thank you very much for coming to City Hall. I know you and I have conversed over the phone, and I'm going to ask Assistant City Manager Joey Zapata to work directly with you. I know that they've been doing a couple of things, but Joey, if you don't mind speaking to Mr. Hall, thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Your next speaker is Evelyn Daniel. Evelyn Daniel, not present. Beatrice Velasquez. Please state your name and address for the record.
Good morning to you all, Mr. Mayor, council members. My name is Beatrice Velasquez. I live at 6914 Altair Avenue. And I come to you today as a last resort. There's a Spanish saying that says, todos tenemos cola que le pisen, which basically means that no one is perfect. If we dig into people's business, you will find faults in everyone. So today, I come to tell you my side of the story here. I know city rules and ordinances are there to keep order, and all of us citizens should abide by them. After all, the law is equal, but this past 2 years, though, I have found that it is more equal for some of the City of Dallas employees, like Mr. Rick Galtharian, Director of Public Works. He has been bullying me. I feel like I've been bullied. I'm becoming increasingly agitated at the abuse of the power of the City of Dallas employees and those in the leadership that are riding me roughshod. I'm emotionally and physically sick due to the turmoil of this chasm. Again, I say, Mr. Rick Galtharian, Director of Public Works, has been bullying me. I'm up here shaking. I feel very emotional over this whole thing. There's been various interpretations of rules from one employee to another. I'm not really sure what's going on. I've been very nervous and anxious over this whole ordeal starting up again. For this reason, I come to you today. 12 years ago, I installed pavers on the public right-of-way. I stay on a narrow asphalt street, and I installed these pavers between the street and my property line. I made a parking court of this area, and I had no problem whatsoever. So why am I here, right? Well, 2 years ago, one of my neighbors anonymously reported it. They didn't like it. So that's when our problem started. City department after city department started coming after me. I have complied with every request made by each employee of the city of Dallas. Only for this nonsense to start up again 2 years later. Same problem. A good outcome does not look good for me. That is why I come to make a formal complaint against Mr. Rick Galsterian, Director of Public Works. I would probably take 30 minutes to explain my situation. My speaking time is about up. I have copied the communication that has transpired between the city of Dallas and myself and my husband. It's this much. I have sent each one of you a package. Has my permit where I was approved. It's got evidence of the reports that were made through 311, zoning, building, where everybody's, you know, signed off on it, no violation, complied, resolved. But here I am again.
Ms. Velasquez, thank you very much. I'm going to ask the city manager to look into this and give us, since everybody was sent in material, to get a report back to us on this. Thank you very much.
Yes, I need some direction. What do I do next?
The city manager will get with you.
Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you.
That concludes your speakers this morning, Mr. Mayor. If you'd like, I'll go ahead and continue to the voting agenda.
Legislative overview, Mr.
Larry is going to do an overview of our legislative session. I just want to tell you it was a really tough one and commend Larry for his good work. We started this session worrying about how much impact the state's changes would have on our budget. It has had some, but not nearly as much as we worried about thinking about it having at the beginning. So I wanted to thank Larry and our chair of our legislative committee for the exceptional work, and I think Councilwoman Hill wants to talk about this a little too.
Yes, Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Ms. Hill. We work as a legislative team. The leader of the team is clearly our lobbyist extraordinaire, Larry Castro. They don't get any better than Larry Castro. If I could say that 15 times, I would. He's the man on the ground down in Austin. He lets us know what's going on. I simply back him up when he needs it. Everything he's going to that he is going to talk with us about this morning, he can take direct credit for because he got it done. He is up at midnight talking to me and then up again at 5 a.m. talking to Ms. Hume. But he gets it done. He works with the other big city lobbyists. They make sure legislation is passed that we need, and they make sure the things that hurt us do not get passed. Council members, that's what you're going to hear about this morning. The things that we got passed, Mr. Castro did an extraordinary job. I mean, absolutely extraordinary in getting this list passed, and equally extraordinary was keeping the things that really hurt us from being passed. The official briefing is the one in your briefing packet. When I went over the briefing packet, it occurred to me that I could not keep all of this in my head. And with Mr. Castro's help, I offered you the one-page summary. But the one-page summary is simply to help you. The official briefing is the briefing in the briefing packet. Mr. Castro.
Mayor, council members, good morning. It's a pleasure to be back with you. I'm going to be brief. Judge Hill is overly gracious in her comments. Under her chairmanship, we did have a successful session relative to at least to what we thought we were going to have going into this session. And much appreciation goes to her, I know, and a lot of thanks goes to many of you in this room who caught that 6:35 flight down to Austin for that 8 o'clock hearing that we were rushing to. We always had council involvement when we needed it, and that is key. They want to hear from you. They want to hear from the elected officials. And the success of our session is directly proportionate to how much time you want to put in. So I thank you. I thank Judge Hill for your leadership and our package. I'm going to be very brief. I'll try to do my part, Mayor, to get through the three briefings this morning. I'm not going to touch base on every one of these issues. In fact, what I plan to do is several of you have emailed or called me with questions, and some of them overlap. There's confusion about some of the bills. I'm going to hit those first. There's only about five or six. I'm going to hit the bill or two that's going to end up in your lap pretty soon for council action, just to give you a heads up. And then if you have questions, certainly I'll answer them, or you can email or me. The decision, the difficulty in giving this overview is getting you the information that you need. This is certainly not a list of all the bills that affect municipalities that passed this session. There were well over 1,000 bills introduced affecting cities, most of them harmful to the city's interests. Well over 100, almost 200 bills passed affecting municipalities. So I say that if you want the entire packet, briefing packet, our office can certainly get that to you. If you want every single bill affecting municipalities, it's of course 50 pages or so long, but we have a short synopsis of those bills. I'll be happy to get that to you if you so desire. Let me just quickly begin the four or five bills highlighted. There have been some questions about exactly what did they do in House Bill 1, the appropriations bill, and how that affected the city's budget. There is some confusion. The state, for the first time, did take since Reconstruction, actually, the state took a portion of the city's general revenue fund. It was a hard-fought battle, but they were not going to change their mind. What that ended up doing is they took a portion of the city's mixed beverage tax. It has an impact to the city of $1.7 million per year. Some of you have thought, well, Larry, I thought you won that because you got the statute passed. Let me clarify. You will get that money back in 2013. The statute on the books today read, the legislature shall not appropriate more than 10% of mixed beverage tax back to the city in which it originates. Not more than. We've always got our 10% of the mixed beverage tax. This year in the House Appropriations Budget Bill, they appropriated us 8% back. Then they were not going to give it back, no matter how much we screamed and cried. We did change the statute, though. The statute now reads, in effective for your fiscal year 2013-2014 and thereon, the state legislature shall not appropriate less than 10% of the mixed beverage tax back to the city. In other words, you know, the city coalition could not kill House Bill 1, the budget bill. But if the legislature wants to take our money again, they're going to have to pass a standalone bill changing that statute, which we are much more effective at stopping a standalone bill than we are, of course, the appropriation. So the next 2 years, it hurts, but you get it back. I just wanted to quickly touch on you've seen a couple articles in the paper. We did pass $320 million in what's called Prop 12 funds for, it's not three bridges, but the two bridges remaining, and those are specifically listed in the statute, and that should help out a little bit. Those were voter-approved bonds 4 years ago, and the legislature, however, has to appropriate those revenue bonds, and we were successful at getting those appropriated. Our CDA projects, those are comprehensive development agreements. They allow for private, public tollway authorities. Those were banned by the legislature 6 years ago. We got the authority back to use those type of comprehensive development agreements, public-private partnerships, to build the three North Texas tollway projects that are on the books right now. The Senate Bill 977, many of you were briefed about the lawsuit going in on Irving. I only bring this up just to say there's been confusion about the mixed beverage tax issue that I just talked about, which has nothing to do with the Convention Center Hotel, absolutely nothing. And the bill that we had to pass to keep our state portion of the funds flowing to the funding of the Convention Center Hotel. I won't go into details about that lawsuit, but it was passed. We were successful in maintaining the revenue that the state had promised it would contribute toward the payment of the bonds for the Convention Center Hotel. So those are safe and secure. However the Irving lawsuit turns out now, we will not be affected by that lawsuit. Several of you have sent me an email about the new hotel PID issue and the streetcar trolley PID issue. You're going to be briefed in more detail about that in the upcoming weeks and months. I'll just leave that at this. There is nothing in that legislation that changes your authority to approve or disapprove a PID project. We did broaden that authority to allow transportation, i.e. streetcar trolley. We broadened the authority to allow deferred assessments. And, of course, you've heard about maybe the hotel PID, which allows an additional assessment on hotels in the city of Dallas only, above 100, with 100 rooms or more. I will just summarize that by saying they cannot do anything, nothing can be done without your approval. They have to come to you for the structure, the financing, where the money goes, all that has to be brought to you for your approval. So there was some confusion about there about, you know, can they go off and do that? They cannot. There were also some questions about what the state did in the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality Sunset Bill with regard to our water rights. I have preached and cried for years that the state eventually would come after your water rights, that it has been documented. They want the water rights so that they can disperse that water in what they see as a more efficient manner, regardless of who paid for it, which citizens paid for it, and of course you hold very valuable, you being the City of Dallas, hold very valuable water rights. Legislation was introduced this year that in a condition of a drought, the state was authorized to come in and usurp your water rights and redistribute your water holdings. Drought was undefined, and of course somewhere in Texas we're always in a drought. We were able to get that legislation amended so that they no longer have that authority. There are some changes to that state law, but that's not the end of that fight, and especially if it doesn't rain before next session. This could be, we've got 2 years, so if it doesn't improve, they always say it will take an emergency. It's going to take an emergency situation to drive water policy in this state, whether it be water fees, water funding, water rights. And always in November of an even numbered year, right before the legislature goes into session, we seem to have record rain. And I don't know whether that's good or bad for the city of Dallas, legislatively speaking, but we'll see if that holds true. Very quickly on the credit service organization bill and payday lending. Been a lot of confusion about that. I won't go into great detail because there is a pending lawsuit that has been filed against the City of Dallas. I'll leave the City Attorney's Office to handle those briefings in executive session. Suffice it to say, that was not a helpful bill. There is no expanded authority under that bill for the City of Dallas. This bill is very similar, almost identical, to the group home legislation passed 4 years ago. And if I could put out one fire, it would be the misconception about these bills and the danger that the city takes on when we push reform against what I would consider, you know, significant, politically powerful entities. Payday lending and group homes both started out as city-initiated, when I say city, broad city interests, a coalition of cities across the state, started out as city-led initiatives. You end up, unsuccessfully in this case, being unable to kill your own bill. This was the classic example. Payday lending was cities-initiated. It gets to the Senate. It has been hijacked, and now there's too much momentum to pull the plug on it. Same thing happened with group homes. Some of you may have constituents that push you and the city to use its authority under House Bill 216 from 2009 to get a handle on the group home problems. House Bill 216 is not a great bill. There is some leeway under that bill, which I know the city attorney's office will be has briefed you on, and we'll be briefing you on in the future, that there is some room to address a small portion of the boarding home problem. But House Bill 216 preempted much of your authority under that legislation. It preempted your authority basically to inspect or investigate state licensed facilities. Only the unlicensed facilities operating illegally can the city go after. To have broader authority, we're going to have to go and pursue more legislative changes. I had a discussion with a sponsor of that bill, and it didn't go well this session. They are right now not amenable to changing that. Maybe that changes in the future. Mayor members, I will leave that there and answer any questions that you may have. I know you've got a long day, but thank you again for your help this session. It was a good session.
Thank you. We'll entertain questions. Mr. Atkins,
sir. Yeah, Larry. You know, I just want clarification. You were saying that this year, the $1.7 million we'd be losing in veterans tax, what year is 2012 and 2013?
Your 2013-2014 city fiscal year, you will get the money back.
Okay.
Assuming they don't pass a bill down our throat, we don't think.
What you're saying, we will not get the money back, because we'll lose that. And the 1.7, you will lose that. You will not get that back.
I will not get that money that you are currently out back. We will just get $1.7 million approximately more or in beginning in 2013.
Okay. I just want to have clarification. Thank you.
Ms. Davis?
Thank you so much. I have a couple of questions. On the Prop 12 bonds, can you go over that one more time for me?
The legislature in 2009
mm-hmm.
authorized basically the state to borrow, and it was voter approved, the state to borrow $6 billion. And the in a nutshell, it increased the borrowing capacity of the state of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
The voters did. They increased that borrowing capacity by $6 billion. That's the first step. The second step is that the legislature then has to, when they borrow that money on the market, of course there's interest and principal payments to make on those funds. The legislature has to approve an amount in the budget to service those funds that they will borrow.
Okay.
So the state had already borrowed, or I guess the right word is authorized, the acquisition of $3 billion
okay.
in those funds, and are currently servicing that debt. And those are projects that have already are on the books and being worked. The legislature this year, and what was unique is it was an especially difficult budget year, they went ahead and approved the borrowing of $3 billion more.
How much do we get, the city of Dallas?
Well, specifically, project specific, it's about $320 million for the bridges. Now, there are some peripheral projects that will benefit Dallas, but those are the specific Dallas mentioned projects. Those are mentioned in the legislation.
It's really, on the state, is just that horseshoe that connects the bridges that are where 35 and 30 come together there.
Okay. On the HB House Bill 216 on the boarding houses. You know, and I can't speak for my other colleagues, but I have a problem with boarding houses in my district. And why can't, what is it, do the state not see boarding houses as a problem? Or what do we need to do? Do we need to pick up the phone and call our senators and call our state legislators and let them know that we have issues with boarding houses?
I think this has to be a constituent-driven issue. They have got, when the time comes next session, I would suggest that we get as many people contacted who will in turn let the Dallas delegation know that this is a big deal. Today, they haven't heard that. They heard from the city, but the specific legislator that drives this issue is not a Dallas area member, but is just not sympathetic. In my conversation with him...
Is he the chair of the committee?
No, he's not. They believe that the state should be funding code inspectors for the Department of Aging and Disability Services. This office is not sympathetic to cities, I would say, to put it subtly. But they would prefer that the legislature fund the state agency, which would in turn hire more code inspectors to send out.
But we have that, and that's not our issue. Our issue is just the hanging out of boarding houses. They come into areas and buy these houses. There's no supervision on none of it. It's a whole lot of problems. So what do? We just go along to get along, huh?
Well, I think it's two-pronged. I think the city attorney's office may actually have some proposals soon, and city manager, on what we can do under the parameters of the existing legislation. And many of the activities that are going on that you mentioned, we may be able to address if they are illegal or in violation of an ordinance otherwise. But as far as the activities occurring inside, we are preempted to a large degree.
Ms. Davis, the one thing that I hear Larry saying, that we've tried the city's influence, y'all's influence, and he's really saying your constituents need to start calling too, because they're not listening to the steps we've taken thus far. And so people that are struggling in their neighborhoods with these issues are concerned about how they're managed or regulated in the group homes. You know, individuals need to be encouraged to call the state reps.
So they need to call their state senators and their state legislators individually?
And I will work with you on the timing of that, council member.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Larry.
Good morning,
it's
council. Welcome back.
Good to see you again. Thank you. I had a couple of questions. I guess the first one comes from Ms. Davis's questions, which is, who is this gentleman that is not sympathetic? I can't ask that. Well, I'll ask you privately,
okay.
This is the name that shall not be mentioned. Okay. What is the, on the CDAs that we have the ability to do three projects,
yes.
What is the Grand Parkway?
What is the Grand Parkway?
Yeah, what is the Grand Parkway?
That is more of a Tarrant County.
That is a Tarrant County project?
It is more of a Tarrant County-oriented project than Dallas County. Is someone, I'm looking for help and no one's helping. But I can get that answer, council member.
Okay. If you could let me know,
absolutely.
I'd appreciate it. And then on the non-contiguous PID that we're looking at for the streetcar project, does that also apply to something I've been hearing about arts funding?
Ms. Grayson, this one's going to come back to y'all, and there's a lot of discussion, because obviously it's a good little bit of money, about what and where it would go funding. They have to come back to you with a structure and a spending plan, and so that'll be back to you probably after the budget process.
So the use of a non-contiguous PID isn't necessarily only for streetcars. It may be applied to other things too.
Well, the PID, you know, of course, is kind of a taxation of yourself. So the folks that are paying it will want to have a conversation about that. But y'all will be having a conversation after the budget work's done. So it's your control completely.
It's up to us
yes.
to how we decide how we want
yes.
to spend that.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Larry.
Ms. Hassel. Good morning.
Thank you and Judge Hill for the great work you did on this session. I think it came out a lot better than when some of us went down early on. So I want to thank you for all your hard work and also Judge Hill. My question is on page 8. It's Giddings House Bill 1869 on local preference. One of the things that Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins and I, we sit in procurement meetings at least twice a month. And, you know, it just, because there is no local preference, I think that's a federal standard right now, we see companies coming in and getting at the lowest bid. They get, you know, these wonderful contracts, but they don't reside in Dallas. And so our jobs are limited because of local preference. So can you just give me a quick, you know, what you think HB 1869 did or didn't do?
Here's what I think it purports to do, and I may get off into the legal weeds that I have to call the city attorney up, and it may be that this is appropriate for another briefing. It, because of the way the bidding statute is structured, it's fairly complicated. I'm not sure all of the changes in the sections that were necessary to get the local preference bidding authorization were made. That may not be true. The intent of the bill, the way the bill analysis read, and the intent I know of Chairwoman Giddings, was that if a bidder lives within inside the corporate boundaries or operates a principal place of business within inside the corporate boundaries of a municipality, and comes within 3% of the lowest bid, then the city council may adopt a policy where it may choose to award the bid, the project, to that locally residing bidder. That is the intent. Now whether this bill actually gets us across that line, we may need to hash that out a little bit, but that is what the bill was.
Our intent was to bring this back to you with a more in-depth discussion about what we thought it could or couldn't do. So.
Okay, because the way I read it, the small to medium-sized cities can do this right now, and the way I read it, the bill said that now we were expanding that to the more populous cities. However, populous was not defined. So.
The bracket was changed to include the city of Dallas.
Okay.
However, it's even been cumbersome for the cities that have been included in this before to utilize it because of some legal issues.
Okay.
So just removing the bracket to ostensibly include the city of Dallas may or may not get us there, but I think Mayor.
And we may have to have some discussions on it and some adjustments during the next legislative session, but it is a packet we'll bring back to you.
Okay.
That one only in detail.
Is it clear that it's if it's personal residence or corporate residence?
It is not clear, Mayor, but I think it uses the word operating principal place of business. Operates his or her personal place of business, so it doesn't even necessarily mean that you actually have to reside in the city if you have your shop inside the city. But that, again, goes to one of the legal nuances that we're not clear on.
Yeah.
Is that?
I'm not finished.
I apologize.
House Bill 3328 talks about fracking. And I guess after listening to about 30 speakers last night, with 30 speakers who had great concern about fracking, what is your take on this bill?
We are very much going to be involved in the rulemaking process of the Railroad Commission right now. The bill actually reads like a very good bill. State of Texas, to its credit, has passed one of the first chemical disclosure bills in the country with respect to fracking. There's one sentence that I won't use the word gut, but does make problematic the bill. And rulemaking process is being pursued right now by the Railroad Commission on this. That one sentence is that it says an operator must disclose the kind and amount of chemicals that it uses in its fracking process, except for proprietary processes and or chemicals. It's not defined. We don't know what proprietary means. That's going to be defined by rulemaking. So in other words, right, if you just read it on its face right now, it's up to the operator to basically say, well, this particular chemical or this combination of chemicals is proprietary, and I don't have to disclose it. But we're going to be pushing the Railroad Commission to, the best we can, adopt rules that doesn't make that as large a loophole as it might appear. And that will probably take a year, Councilmember.
Okay. Well, again, thank you, and I assume we'll have a lot more discussion on fracking. Again, thank you, Gary. You know, you did a great job. Thank you.
Ms. Dunn.
Thank you, Mayor. And Delia focused on the same two bills that I was going to, so I won't go over those again. But on House Bill 3328, my question is for our city attorneys. And Tom, you don't have to answer this now. I would just like you to provide a legal opinion to the council on this at some point, perhaps an executive session, on whether or not this bill occupies the field and what authority the city will continue to have on requiring disclosure of fracking fluids.
All right. Okay. We'll prepare to do that.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Any other questions? Okay, Ms. Davis.
Can you go over House Bill 694, please?
Is that metal recycling?
Mm-hmm.
That was one of our, and much praise goes to Lieutenant Tittle and the police department for staying on top of this one. The bill is a very lengthy bill, Councilmember. What our primary objective in that whole process was to maintain the ordinance that you had passed.
Okay.
With this, which we absolutely did 100%. Not only did that, but actually got the statute beefed up a little bit.
Okay.
To help us.
Okay.
So nothing in your ordinance is preempted. In fact, there's a specific grandfathering clause in there for the Dallas no cash provision.
Okay.
Everything else, if you actually read the legislation, reads very much like what the Dallas City Council passed.
Okay. Thank you.
And so that's
let me ask one and a half questions here, I think. I assume you meet with all the legislators in the city of Dallas, that represent the Dallas city of Dallas?
Yes, sir.
So you've talked to each one of them in that regards? It's ongoing conversation? Okay. Because I think it's very important to do. Give us a sense of how aligned those legislators are as a group, not individually, to what we are trying to in our agenda.
I think Dallas, the Dallas delegation, has, for the most part, been very helpful and has avoided what I would call more of the Harris County, Houston area problem, where they have legislators actually introducing legislation preempting city authority. We've been very fortunate to not have legislators actually introduce bills. That doesn't mean we necessarily have their vote on another bill, but it is very sensitive when one of your own members introduces a bill that you have to go kill, and they're probably also carrying two or three of your bills. We have avoided that issue. That being said and done, times are changing. They're different. You read the newspaper that, what just happened in D.C. was, I think, came on the heels of something very similar in Austin. There's just a very much of a, we don't want one more single penny or dime flowing, not just to the state, but very much so local government. And it's tough to explain. It's just where we are right now. Council Mayor, I would say we have local members of the delegation on both sides of that issue. But take away the funding part. When it comes to preemption, your franchise fees, your right to control your right-of-way, the water resources, I think it's a fairly cohesive delegation. Fracking, drilling, those are controversial. I'd say I'd split that down the middle, whether they're for or against the city on regulatory authority of drilling.
Okay. Thank you. You answered my question. No more questions. I'd like Ms. Hill to close. Oh, Ms. Hatha, did you have some?
Okay. I sit on the County Juvenile Advisory Commission with two of the commissioners. And there were several public safety bills that were passed, and so I'd like to get a briefing on that. I think Sergeant Tittle is very much aware of that, so if we could put that on the agenda, that'd be great.
Oh,
thank you.
Mean at a future time? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Castro, thank you for this briefing and, again, for the very exceptional work that you do at Austin. Council members, I hope you get a sense from what he said of the very sensitive nature of his work. We do not disclose our enemies because our enemies tomorrow may be our friends. And if we disclose them in public, then we've made a public enemy. And so we don't do that. Mr. Castro, not only Mr. Mayor works with the Dallas delegation, he works with everybody down there. And colleagues, as you know, when we're developing the legislative agenda, I always ask you, who do you know, whether it's Dallas or not? If he has something going on that needs immediate attention, and he calls me at 10 o'clock at night, I've got to get you down there at 6 o'clock the next morning. You've all been very, very helpful and very receptive to what we've asked you to do. And that is why we have been so successful, because we work as a team. I will ask you to continue in that method. Please, please do not take individual initiatives to the legislature. Please, whatever it is you need, let me know or let Mr. Castro know. If you don't feel like talking to me, that's fine. But tell it to Mr. Castro, and do not get out in front of the team, because we're not affected that way. You heard him say that one sentence can change the entire bill. The same thing can happen with one word. And so we have to be very, very careful as a team. As I said, we've always been very successful. Also, colleagues, the timing of what we do. I am absolutely committed to following Mr. Castro's lead. He tells me when it is time to do whatever we need to do, because that's another part of being successful legislatively. I want to thank all of you again, but our entire team, Ms. Hume, for her good work and having the good sense to keep Mr. Castro on staff and paying him a little bit of money every once in a while, Brett Wilkinson, Anna Holmes, our entire Dallas delegation, even if they don't support us, we find a way to fix it and to cover them. And finally, again, I cannot say too much about Mr. Castro and thank him too much. Thank you so much.
Yes, Ms. Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor and Larry. Great job. Ms. Hill, I think that you made really well good points right now. Also, when Ms. Hill asked us to give our legislators a call regarding something we want or don't want, the calls must go in now. She means it. We really need to get on that phone and get those calls in, because it is utmost important that they know either we have, you know, we have their back. We are giving a call, and we've got our constituents. We are their constituents. So it's really important to follow that lead. So, Ms. Hill, thank you for your leadership.
I just want to reiterate, you bragged on everybody else, but let's brag on you. Thank you for your leadership, Ms. Hill, and this is very important for the City of Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor,
for the briefing. Let's move to briefing item number letter B.
Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, Commercial Development Land Use Plan and Financial Business Model. I think we've got a couple of guests, but John Terrell and Jeff, introduce you first. Jeff Fagan.
Yeah,
thank you,
Mayor,
for being here, Jeff.
Appreciate it very much. Thank you all for the opportunity to come before the mayor and the council. Today we'll be presenting the results of a land use plan exercise that we went through at the FW Airport that relates to commercial development on the airport. It also relates to the long-term financial study on the impacts of future commercial development on DFW Airport, as well as the tax implications for the cities of Dallas and Fort Worth. You know, over 40 years ago, J. Eric Johnson, along with a number of other leaders, gave us 18,000 acres of land, and that vision and wisdom has allowed us to develop one of the great airports of the world and highest capacity airport in the world, but also allowed us to have some opportunities from a commercial development standpoint on the peripheral of the airport land. Over the last 2 years, we have been working with a commercial development task force made up of Dallas and Fort Worth and DFW Airport. We had members of the Economic Development Department as well as the Legal Department work with us as we explored, you know, what is the appropriate land use, but also what are the economic opportunities at the DFW Airport from that. And we really greatly appreciate the city's participation on this effort. They've met probably monthly for the last 18 months, and the study has been going on for the last 12 months. And they really worked hand in hand with us to, we wanted to make sure that all the assumptions that were being used in the study were consistent and with the economic development folks' thinking, as well as the numbers that were being generated. And we believe that the data does show that there are some great opportunities to generate revenues, not only for the owner cities of Dallas and Fort Worth, but also for DFW Airport. And again, all of the revenue that we generate at the airport, the non-airline revenue that we generate, goes to offsetting the cost to the airlines and paying for the huge capital investment that we have at the airport. Today we will hear from John Terrell. John is our Vice President of Commercial Development. He will take you through the information. We will be available to answer any questions that anybody might have. And of course, if any of the members of the council would ever like to come out to DFW and get a tour of some of these land areas that we are considering, it would be our pleasure to do that. We are not asking for any decisions today. This is simply a briefing. Mayor Rawlings reminded me we have two new board members on the board at DFW, the two mayors of Dallas and Fort Worth, and I have not had a chance to really brief them in great detail yet. We have briefed the board over the last 2 years as part of our board retreat last year, but we look forward to that opportunity, Mayor, and we recognize that both mayors have not had the opportunity to see all of the information that we have to present today, but this is just another step in the process to provide information to the council. Let me introduce John Terrell, again, Vice President of Commercial Development. John?
And also Mayor of Southlake. So
I've got the airport pin on today.
Okay, I got it, but I just want to welcome.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. And thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. We have some kind of neat things to be presenting, and I want to reiterate what Jeff said about the task force. It has been just critical in the success and moving forward of commercial development opportunities, land use planning, and et cetera, and we take our hats off to city staff and their participation in working with us for the last couple of years on all of these items. Just real quickly, a reminder, the airport is jointly owned by the cities of Dallas and Fort Worth, and we operate and are handled by the airport board that is appointed by you and the city of Fort Worth, and certainly considered one of the most successful cooperative efforts in the history of Texas and the Metroplex. Much like any of the cities in the area, we have had a land use process implemented since the opening of the airport, and we redo that about every 5 years, much like any other city. The last one that we did was in 2007, and we are working on the next one coming up. It really is like your land use planning. It is not zoning. It is a direction and a vision for the future. It promotes highest and best use
We have not only looked at the infrastructure, et cetera, but we also took a look at the market analysis of what can work in each one of these locations. We leveraged the unique location of DFW Airport and identity and experience. And the last land use plan was approved by the DFW board, and we have to send every land use plan to the FAA as well, and they have approved it. There we go. We've got the land use plan. We've got about 18,000 acres on the airport. The land use plan identified about 6,600 acres of the 18,000, which could be used for other development other than runways and operations. We have land use policies and leasing policies in place. We do not sell the land. We have 40-year lease terms, which we do on any of the commercial development, up to 40 years. Anything over 40 years has to come to both owner cities for further approval. It does. We have land leasing policies in place that avoid competition with any of our owner cities, and that is paramount in anything that we do. We ask any of the developers or users that come on, they have to provide us with documentation that they have looked at other sites in Dallas and Fort Worth, and they cannot find anything that meets their needs. And I do have a copy that we can provide of the policy. And bottom line, it gives us an opportunity to increase revenues to not only the airport, help lower costs for the airlines and keep that economic engine running, but also is a source of revenue for the owner cities. And we're going to talk some more about that. In terms of the land use plan, I think each one of you should have been provided in your packets a copy of the land use plan that is the fold-out version, so I won't go into a lot of detail on that. You can also thank your staff. We had about a three-hour presentation that they pared down to 15 minutes. So they did a very nice job there. But there's a lot of information in that packet that we gave to you. Why do we do this land use planning? We have a lot of support for our airport employees and passengers. Land leasing policies, making sure that those align with this land use plan and the policies coordinated together. We are certainly trying to promote the economic benefits and impacts for the entire North Texas region, especially for our owner cities. And then we have the opportunity to generate the non-airline revenues that help us sustain and are critical to the operations of DFW Airport. We did have a board meeting. Actually, it was a retreat in 2009, in which the prior mayors had been presented with this and the board, and they were very supportive overall of the direction of the land use plan. They did made a couple of suggestions to us in the form of they would prefer that, and gave instructions that we not develop hotels over 500 rooms. We are not to develop convention centers or casinos into the future. What is the ability to provide those revenues to the owner cities? The federal government, of course, has various statutes and laws that prohibit diversion of revenues off of an airport. The one area that a revenue can be generated on the airport that is not prohibited are taxes. And so we have put in place over the number of years since about 1999 various tax sharing agreements with the cities of Euless and Irving. And we have legislatively mandated tax sharing in the portion of Grapevine that you see in yellow. We are currently generating about $63 million a year to all taxing entities. And that equates to about $5 million a year to each of the owner cities. And then as you look at the state, counties, and the school districts impacted. And that's one of the focus points of this study that we're going to go into, because as we continue to develop, this is an opportunity for both of our owner cities, if the vision is the same moving forward, that commercial development can generate huge numbers in terms of revenue and taxes to the owner cities going forward, and I'll share with you some of that. Once we presented the land use plan to the board, the owner cities, and we've also talked to the FAA, and they are also supportive of this vision, one of the things that we need to determine was getting third-party consultants to come in and look at the real opportunity, put it on paper, and we spent the last 18 months working with JLL, Barra Engineering, and we looked at a number of different areas on the airport, 13 different districts. It wasn't every single acre available for development, but the most development opportunity that is short-term and mid-term. We're looking at the long-term viability of that development, analyzing the investment versus the revenue that can be generated, the sharing, tax sharing opportunities that might be able to occur in terms of sharing on the revenues that would be created to both the owner cities and the host cities. Airport is not a tax collector, so all of those taxes end up going to the tax collecting entities. And then looking at a prioritizing and phasing the various developments, because this is, we're talking long term, this is a 2030 type program, 2040 type program, as you look at future development out here on the airport. You will note that we have 13 different districts that are shown on the map in this presentation, and those are the main ones that we focused on. I won't belabor, but we went through an exercise on each one of those districts, looking at the utilities that would be required, traffic impact studies, what the infrastructure costs would be, types of market studies as to what could be developed on those sites, etc. And then kind of the money slides are starting here. As you look at what that development can occur into the future if developed along the lines of our land use plan, we're looking at additional revenues. These do not include existing revenues today. Additional revenues going out into 2038 of $260+ million a year in rents to DFW. But then as you look at the opportunities into Fort Worth and Dallas, you're looking at $64 million to $65 million annually to this owner city of Dallas. That we thought was extremely important in terms of what we looked at across the board, the opportunities from an MWBE construction. You look down the list of all the different things that can occur on the airport and all the different beneficiaries. It's also important to note that that revenue that we're talking about is pretty much free to the owner cities. Normally you're collecting taxes and paying for infrastructure. You're paying for police and fire services. But the airport provides all of that. So this is kind of a cash cow opportunity out at the airport. And what we thought was these numbers were significant enough that we really needed to bring them to you and make you aware of the opportunities going forward. Revenues to the owner cities, you can see that that kind of ramps up as we look moving forward for the next couple of years. Development takes a bit of time, and until we get some of the larger developments on the ground, you can see in 2015 through 2021, it really starts spiking up there. Summary. We believe that we can accomplish a lot more out at the airport than just fundamental airport operations. That's extremely important. I know everyone considers the DFW airport as the economic engine for North Texas. We believe we can put that engine on steroids and with the development. And commercial development does provide a huge number of MWBE opportunities. We have in every RFP, RFQ that we do, we have policies throughout the airport that is a very high priority for us. And commercial development is part of that same project or process and policy. So we have demonstrated, and our developers understand that we are looking for MWBE opportunities in all their contractors, and in many cases, equity investment. The commercial development opportunities create no budget deficits or negative budget impacts on the owner cities, as I explained a moment ago. And these tax sharing arrangements create a stable revenue or potential to the owner cities going forward.
We believe that the owner cities can benefit greatly, as well as the entire region, and certainly the airport and our airlines, from commercially developing the airport further. And we have a lot of information in terms of our land use plan. We probably have 2 feet a stack of supporting documentation on this, and the task force members of the owner cities work hand in hand with us to through this process and through this outside consulting. That's pretty much it for our presentation. Thank you very much, and if you have any questions, we'd be happy to entertain them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cadet. Okay, you want to use Mary?
Good, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Hill. First, I've got to thank Jeff and Mayor Carroll for all you guys do out at DFW and your staff. You've got some of the best people in the country working with you, and I've had the opportunity of being able to work with you from time to time, and you all do a fantastic job. So I've got to thank you first for that. I wanted to ask you about, you know, the properties, the surrounding properties, and your developments that you're looking to do. And I've seen some, and they're great, and they're going to be an advantage. I think we've got one of the best airports in the world, and you guys know what's happening all over the world, which is fantastic, and you do a great job there. But I want to make sure that the surrounding properties of the immediate fields and the airport, that we hold back properties in case we need them for future air use. Because I'll tell you, I see coming up probably a very large jump in maybe a shipping and this type thing. With DFW, and you may have a completely different section out at DFW for shipping only. And I want to make sure we keep property to build on to our immediate airport and our fields if we need that in the coming years.
Well, Councilman, if you look at our master plan, we really have dedicated 12,000 acres, which is probably enough land to put the three largest airports in the United States within. But 12,000 acres we really have preserved around all the airfields, all the clear zones, but we also have preserved quite a bit of land for warehouse distribution to support the cargo. In fact, that's one of the biggest areas of potential growth for us in the future. And cargo is exploding at DFW, and we have a lot of interest in developing on the property warehouse and distribution facilities to support that, to be supported by the aviation. So I appreciate your comment, and we have kind of overdone it when it comes to protecting the aviation side of the house. Most of this land is actually on the other side of the highway where there's no direct taxiway connection even possible.
Thank you, and you're right, you do. And I'll tell you, I think you've got one of the best MWBE systems in the country out there where you guys are, and it works fantastic. So thank you all for all you do.
Appreciate
thank you, Mayor.
Ms. McGowan.
Thank you. Thanks for this presentation. Can we go to slide 11?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. It says total cumulative revenues. How many years are you assuming in
that? That equates to the first column, which is out to year
2038. Oh, I see, 2038. Okay. The division of revenues, is that contractual? Is it legislative? How have the percentages been determined?
The way that is currently handled is there are two tax sharing agreements between the cities of Irving and the city of Euless. Those are an agreement whereby the city of Irving has agreed to split with the cities of Dallas and Fort Worth. One-third goes to Irving and two-thirds go to Dallas and Fort Worth. The vast majority of those taxes are split currently based on board makeup, which is 7/11 to the city of Dallas and 4/11 to the city of Fort Worth. There is an exception at the rental car facility. The taxes generated from the rental car facility are split 50. The two-thirds is split 50-50 between Dallas and Fort Worth. I also want to note that just this last year, we also entered into a new portion. We kind of expanded the tax sharing with the city of Euless, and they agreed to also share any hotel occupancy taxes two-thirds to Dallas and Fort Worth if any hotel is built within the city of Euless. We've also agreed with city staff and all the other host cities recognize and understand that we will not develop a hotel or any development in those cities unless we have a tax sharing agreement on the basic as well as the hotel occupancy tax.
So where it says all other taxing entities, I'm just looking at that $19 billion as compared with the $3 billion coming to Dallas, and I'm wondering whether the presumption is that this is going, that the percentage distribution is going to be based on an existing agreement or whether a new agreement would be developed for this development.
Currently, these numbers are based on the existing agreement because we didn't want to assume that any other agreement would be put in place. So that's still on the existing tax sharing arrangements.
Is there any thought being given to a specific contract for this development that would be different?
This is actually just continuing. This isn't a specific development. These are all the remaining developments in the future for the airport, and we're just assuming
right.
that we would move forward under the same tax sharing arrangements.
Okay. I guess what my hidden question is there any way that Dallas could have a more advantaged contract? That's what I'm trying to...
Ms. Margolin, how this began was the Dallas City Council several years ago said there ought to be a revenue sharing in this process, and council members and staff, and I was one of the staff, and DFW sat down and negotiated the settlement as it is. Now, certainly, you know, you could instruct us to try again, but that's where it came from, and my memory is the early 90s.
Okay. I would really like to know, and it doesn't have to be here, what all the other taxing entities are and what the percentage distribution is. So if there's someone who can get that to me, I would appreciate it.
What I can do is give you, I don't have the percentages, but I can tell you in terms of the total $63 million that was generated for 2009, that $4 million went to you.
Just put it in writing. Just have someone send me the percentages in writing. Okay? Thank you. Thank you, ma'am.
Did you want to clarify a point?
No,
okay. Ms. Hunt?
Thank you, Mayor. Looking at slide 12, I just had a couple of questions. One, are these in today's dollars?
Yes, ma'am.
2011 dollars? And what, I think you mentioned this before, but what part of this is Dallas's share?
Well, if you look at that in terms of revenues to the owner cities, 7-Elevens
of each of these
basically would be it. Other than it, fundamentally right now the rental car facility, which is 50-50,
sure.
generates about $5 million each.
Okay.
So if you subtract $5 million out of...
And then split it out 7. Got it.
Right.
If we could look at slide 10. I was curious about the Grapevine legislative requirement on their taxing split.
Was it slide 10?
Yeah,
there we go.
Slide
this
10.
One?
Yeah, why is the area in Grapevine that's north of the yellow part, why is that grayed out?
You want to take some of that? You've got the history.
Well, of course, this is a, talk about the legislative battle or the negotiations that took place many, many years ago, but we were not able to get that area within the tax sharing agreement. I will say, though, that Grapevine understands that for any development to take place in this area, a tax sharing agreement, like we have with the rest of the airport, will have to take place. So we are in negotiations with them as we look at developments in the Grapevine area. Nothing will happen up there unless there is a tax sharing agreement.
Okay.
It just today it doesn't exist, but I think the next development could.
But it will.
Yeah.
It will. Okay.
And as Jeff mentioned, we are in the midst of negotiating with them now.
And do they? I saw in one of the slides that talked about the North Entertainment
area. Yes, so ma'am. that's what they have planned up there, some type of entertainment complex.
That's what we actually put the land use. When we went through a land use, we actually brought in a group called ERA, which is a national.
So that's recognition. What we would like to see. There.
That's what we would like to see. It generated the most revenue for the owner cities and for the airport.
And I'm just curious, where did that very precise figure of 5.9 million come from?
That was the in terms of in the area of Grapevine when the legislation was put in place. That much tax was being generated at the time, and so the state said, and the legislature
kind of froze
said,
that and said whatever.
Get that first Grapevine, and anything over that is shared.
And when was that?
99, I believe. And it may have been 2001. It was right around 2000.
And what are the taxes being generated from that now?
To the owner cities or total?
Total, in excess of those.
In 2000, I've got the numbers for 2009. In which the owner cities earned about $200,000 over the $6 million.
I don't think Grapevine's gotten back up to that ceiling yet, or if they have,
they did drop back down.
It's just a little bit over it. So Grapevine got a good ceiling in that legislative arrangement.
Right.
Okay.
So there hasn't been a lot of sharing from Grapevine yet. As it grows, of course, it will be.
Yeah, there's been some economic downturns, too, that reduced the taxable rates with some of the property in there that... But I do think as the real opportunity really is in the land north of 114. And the other thing we just want to mention too, we do not have an agreement with Coppell either. Coppell's about 300 acres.
I saw that
of land,
as well, yeah.
And, again, we've had some great discussions with Coppell. I think it's just a matter of the right development.
But the situation is, if they want to develop, we're going to get a taxing agreement. It's just what are the details. There was one other question. Oh, the $6 million threshold, that is static, right? That doesn't change with inflation or through
That's
the
correct.
Years. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Azzo.
Thank you, Mayor. Great presentation. I'm looking at slide 10, where we're talking about the development districts map. And just explain to me, I know most of this is north of the airport. You know, when I go to the airport and come home, I come out the south entrance, and there's a lot of opportunity, obviously, in Irving and, you know, to make that whole strip when you're coming into Dallas from the airport on the southern entrance. There's a huge opportunity now. Are we just landlocked there, or we don't have an agreement with Irving, or what?
If you look at that map, the area number 10, is called Passport Park. It fronts on Highway 183.
Okay.
We've actually made presentations, and it's also important to note, we've made this presentation to all the host cities as well, because we're trying to keep the communication, make sure that we're not doing something in conflict with our neighbors. We're wanting to work with everybody. They're very supportive of the development along 183. We've talked about the fact that the Irving Mall is a little bit dilapidated. They have indicated that they would like to do something on parcel number 10 or Passport Park.
Right.
As you look at that map, we're talking freeway commercial type development along the frontage, and as you move further north, that's about a 600 acre tract. So it's a fairly large piece of property that can accommodate multiple types of development uses. But we're coordinating with the city of Irving, and they're very aware of it and are promoting development at that location.
Right. I think there's just a huge opportunity there right now when you're leaving the airport going south.
Yes, ma'am.
It's pretty dismal. And then on my last comment is just simply your MWBE program is a good one. I would just like to see if there's any way that we can move some of those subcontractors into primes. There's a huge opportunity here, and I'd love to see some of those subcontractors become primes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hazel. Ms. Chu?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just really one question. Where would you, if this model came to be, sort of in the time frame that you're saying that it's going to be, what would you use, what would the airport use this money for?
Councilwoman, DFW is an extraordinarily capital-intensive operation. I mean, this year we'll probably spend $300 to $400 million on new facilities. We're going through a capital program right now of about $1.9 billion. I would say that it's almost insatiable, because the airport continuously improves, continuously grows. Now we're going through kind of a refurbishment, a renewal after 40 years. That $260 million would certainly make a big difference in terms of our revenue streams at the airport, but we would use it to basically pay off debts and to support new debt service for capital needs of the airport. I would just say that no matter what we get in terms of revenue, it hardly ever seems to be enough because of the capital needs of the airport.
Can you send us what your build-up model will be in the next, do you have one for the next 5 or 10 years? You know, what you hope to be building next year, and kind of the state of building out there, but it would be helpful to know,
right,
saying, you know, just, I understand what you're saying, paying off your debt service and incur more debt, but I guess my question was more, what are the amenities that you're looking for in the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, but in fact, I mean, from the airport aviation side of the house, I mean, it's a very, very clear plan of what we're going to be doing over the next 5 years with $1.9 billion terminal renewal and improvement program. We have the DART station that we're building for DART and a number of other projects along those lines. And then, of course, a lot of the development that you see in these various districts is really dependent on Mr. Market if it's a good time to build. But we do see some activity right now, for example, in probably number one and number two districts in particular. Those are two districts that we'll probably see some activity.
Yeah, I was kind of a roundabout way of asking, what do you think that you're going to need, and what in what time frame do you think you're going to need it, the DART station coming into DFW? It's sort of a roundabout way.
Yeah, that's actually in design right now, and we have set aside about $35 million to build the DART station between Terminal A and Terminal B. It's in design. We'll probably go into construction next year and try to get it in place 6 months or so before the service will start.
It's not predicated on this business model, then?
No, we actually have found capital in our capital program to do that, and of course we're doing Terminal A right now, so we'd like to get it built while we have Terminal A, Section A down, and so a lot of that work is going to be done in the next 12 to 18 months.
Okay, and that's for the Orange Line only, but how about the Cotton Belt line coming in?
And then the Cotton Belt will be on the other side of the road next to Terminal B, and when we see a green light as to when that project will take place, we will time our construction to match up with that, and we haven't found funding for that yet, but you know, we have made a commitment to the transit agencies that we will find a way to pay for the station.
Do you know what the price tag of that will be?
It's probably a little bit less than 35, but it's probably in the $20 to $30 million range.
Okay.
Very much a similar type of station on both sides.
Okay. Yeah, if you could give me what your project, a list of your projects and the years that you hope they come in at. I'm trying to get a better idea of if that matches up with your business model and what time frame your business model will come in at. I know you can't predict, obviously.
I mean, unfortunately, when you look at that chart, over the next 5 years, there's not going to be a tremendous amount of new revenue. Today, we do about $30 million or so a year in commercial development revenue. It'll go up incrementally over that time period. The real benefit is a longer term play. So, I doubt seriously that will generate enough revenue to really make a big difference in our capital and financial plan over the next 5 years, but long term will, absolutely will. I mean, that could be the number one revenue source on the airport besides, non-airline revenue source on the airport.
Right. Okay, I just need a little bit more information,
sure.
Really.
Okay.
Yes. Mayor, thank you.
Thank you. Ms. McGrath.
Thank you, Mayor. Two questions, just to follow up with Ms. Coop. On Terminal A for the Orange Line, just show us on this map on page 10 where exactly that would be, and then also the Cotton Belt, just for reference.
The Cotton Belt station will be located in front of the rail line runs right through here.
And so that would be
the Cotton Belt station on the text line coming in from Fort Worth here.
So that would be like near the North Entertainment mixed use, correct?
Right.
Okay.
And then this is approximately where the station will be, the Terminal AB station.
Okay.
And right here is the Beltline station.
And that's actually come out of the ground. Structure, vertical construction is happening. We're working with Irving
on mixed-use development around that station as well.
Sorry, what?
Terminal A right here.
I think just for the future, when we do, when you're doing presentation, that maybe is layered in, so we would just kind of start visioning that, because it's coming up pretty soon.
We have actually a pretty interesting virtual reality of the new train station. It really does give a visual, so we'll be glad to provide that to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Any other questions? John, just...
Huh?
It is. What they're doing, of course, is they're funding between a combination between them and DART are funding the DART station at Beltline. We have additional land that surrounds that station, and part of our negotiations in terms of the easement that will be allowed for the line and the station, we will have the rights to do the concessions at the station, and we also have plans for some office mixed-use development around the perimeter of that station to give it a little bit more density in terms of development. It's got some great access and visibility.
So where is that? Is that in the planning stage right now?
We have site plans. We have, and it's, as a matter of fact, in we have an entire project, which is number 6, called the Beltline Station Development. And that shows all of the potential infrastructure, concept plans for buildings, market analysis of absorption, and projected revenues from that kind of development.
Okay.
Is that the plan, though, that's waiting for a developer? We had no developer who is has expressed interest today, but I think...
So it's our plan.
It's our layout of the site. You. It's not a developer's plan yet.
I understand. Thank you. All right, I know I'm preaching to the choir, but DFW is not only a front door to the world, but it's a huge economic engine for this region. Thank you for your leadership, and we will look forward to wrestling through the nuances and the import of this plan. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
With that, I would like to move the afternoon agenda item up. Ms. Rios, get our briefing on boards and commissions.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We did provide you with a notebook that included a lot of the board and commission reports that you can reference, and you'll kind of hear me in between the presentation reference to that, so that will provide you a lot more detail as to the specific issue that I'm covering. I am presenting to you the biannual nominee screening and appointment process for boards and commissions. This presentation will be made to the City Council every 2 years following a general election, and it's geared more toward two purposes. One is to reiterate to the standing and returning council members how we handle the biannual appointment process, and then as well as provide some in-depth detail for the incoming council members on what the process is for nomination and appointment. In your PowerPoint, you'll see where we kind of define the different types of boards that you have. There's 51 boards where the members are appointed by the City Council. There are three boards where the city manager appoints the membership, one board that is appointed specifically by the mayor, which is the Dallas Housing Authority, for a total of 55 boards. You'll need to keep in mind that the boards are basically in four different classifications. One is the quasi-judicial. Those are, they basically have decision-making authority. You have the advisory boards, which are strictly serving an advisory capacity. The instrumentality are subsidiary of local government created for special purposes, such as the Dallas Housing Finance Corporation. Then you have the miscellaneous boards, which are the municipal management districts. You'll note the Trinity River West, North Oak Cliff, and Cypress Waters. Those are basically the self-governed political subdivisions for the state of Texas. They were formed in 2009. Council approved their formation and did implement certain requirements where the council would have some decision-making authority in appointment of their board of directors. We cover now terms, and the thing to remember is that a board term consists of 2 years. A board term will consist of any time period that involves 1 year plus 1 day, which means that for every 366 plus days, that constitutes a board term. So we state that board members can serve a total of 4 terms, which could total basically 8 years. However, quasi-judicial, which is a decision-making authority boards, are able to continue until they are replaced, whereas the advisory board members will be replaced automatically 9 months after September 30th if they are not appointed. For example, you saw this morning where 2 individuals were appointed. Councilmember Alonso made a motion to clarify for the record that the term for those 2 individuals, because they're being appointed prior to September 30th of 2011, that they would serve for that one term as well as the full upcoming term of 2011 to 2013. So in the 2 individuals would serve basically a 2-month period up to September 30th. So that would not constitute a term because, of course, it's specifically 2 months. It's not 366 plus days. The term, of course, always begins October 1 of an odd-numbered year. We did, in fact, clarify that you do have instrumentality, which are the same as quasi-judicial boards. We move now to service for eligibility. There are certain guidelines under Chapter 8 of the Dallas City Code that states what eligibility requirements your nominees have to have at the point that they become eligible for appointment. Now, those qualifications have to continue during their tenure. The board members also have to be in compliance with the city charter, Chapter 12A of the Dallas City Code. One other thing is that they cannot have direct or indirect financial interest in any contracts within the city, and that's where you get into conflicts of interest being forms being filled out at council meetings or their committee meetings when issues arise that they may have a conflict in. Each council member, we point out, can nominate 1 person to 17 individual boards. Tab 1 of your notebook will clarify all of the boards that you have and what classification they fall under, which is quasi-advisory, instrumentality, and your municipal water districts. And then it also kind of lets you know the number of members each board will have. The mayor will appoint most board and commission chairs with a council confirmation, and then the mayor also does appoint board of adjustment vice chairs. The council members will nominate and confirm most other board and commission vice chairs. On tab 4, you'll note in your notebook that there are some of boards and commissions that have special qualifications. Those, of course, are stipulated by city code. And one of the issues that council does run into that kind of complicates a little bit is that the general public, which is those individuals that are not required to have special qualifications, can basically be any individual. So those positions are easier to fill. So when council members fill those general public positions, then the remaining council members are left to appoint those with special qualifications. So sometimes it's very difficult to find individuals in that capacity. Now, one of the issues that you did, one of the handouts that we provided this morning, it did let you know those members that are basically termed out that have already served 4 terms. And there were some options presented to you. One is that, as I mentioned, the quasi and the instrumentality basically serve until replaced. So if a member is on a board and they have basically met the 4-term requirement, you can basically just leave them sitting on that board. We do have a few of those. The individuals have been on the board, and they have done such a great job that if the past council members, even the current council members have, they realize that it's really very important to maintain that member on the board. As we begin the appointment process, individuals do need to apply online. The application process has been basically made electronic. We did hold meetings with council assistants, board coordinators to go ahead and advise them of what the application process is. Your council assistants are now educated and can assist your nominees if they run into any issues applying online, and of course our staff is always available. The it is going to still continue where we have to have a nominating memo from the council member, which will need to indicate the individual's name, the board, and then what place if it's a full council appointment. We get into the background check process at that point in time, and your PowerPoint will indicate, it's on page 8, the city secretary's office checks for voting elections, make sure that they're not serving as a campaign treasurer for another elected officer. Sometimes we do find out that, you know, they may potentially, when an election cycle comes into play, sometimes somebody's interested in running for another office. So that situation has arisen in the past. The city attorney's office handles conflicts of interest. Our office will do research on any of the companies that an applicant may mention in the questionnaire for a specific board. We provide those, any possible contracts that may exist. The city attorneys will review this and determine whether or not there's a conflict involved and what the nominee has to do in order to clarify or to clear up that conflict. The city manager's office handles the indebtedness, basically any monies owed to the city in different areas such as parking, library, utility, property taxes. And then the Dallas Police Department will do your criminal background checks. Previously on your screen, we had the nominee processing. It showed a comparison between 2009 and 2011 and how the number of board members had either increased or decreased. For example, in 2009, there were 569 members, and we had 3 full-time employees. Now, based on sunsetting of a few boards, we have 483 members, whereas we have 2 full-time employees to handle that. In 2007, you had 499 members, but we had 5 full-time employees. So the turnaround time was a little bit easier. We could actually do it anywhere between 20 to 30 days. The 30-day period, we do quite well in meeting that throughout the year. However, the biennial process is very complicated because you have a lot of nominations coming in and out. So the turnaround time is 42 days. We know sometimes that's not really satisfactory to some of you, and we do try to do the best way possible. Every department that's involved in the background check process tries to do everything possible to try to kind of shorten that time period. But you're actually looking about a 42-day period. There's a lot of information in your notebook. I don't know if any of you may have any questions, or you can certainly get in touch with me, and I'll be happy to answer any questions on an individual basis. Also in your notebook, you'll notice there's a board matrix, the board status board term that looks like this. We do distribute that basically every week or 2 weeks. And what that shows you is it shows you the number of members for each board and what the status is of that nominee. Now, the report will not tell you who has nominated whom on what board if it's a full council appointee. But there is a tab in your board and on your notebook, and then also the report is online that will tell you who's nominated whom. That basically does conclude my presentation, and I'll be free to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Rios. Ms. Hunt?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Rios, when you were talking about holdover status, can you say one more time which non-quasi-judicial boards that you can have holdover status, right? Just the advisory boards?
It's the advisory boards, like the Animal Shelter.
Or the Cultural Affairs Commission.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thoughts? Okay, thank you, Ms. Rios, for that briefing. We will be, just FYI, I am putting together a transition committee of outside citizens and kind of advising me on my appointees. So if you've got any thoughts that you would like to give me, I'd love to put, you know, those into consideration as well. So I'll be doing that over the next month. Ms. Rios, we are going to get wild here and suggest we talk. We have the open microphone, afternoon speakers right now, and we could maybe get through this, and then we'll end with executive session.
All right, thank you.
If that's okay with everyone, so I'll give you the agenda to introduce our new open microphone speakers.
Thank you. We continue with some of the speakers that were signed up to speak in the morning, because of the limitation for 5 speakers you're being called now. Your first speaker will be Agda Piñon, followed by Arturo Piñon, and I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. You'll notice a timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please stop speaking and allow the next individual their turn. You will address your comments to Mayor Walling, and you will state your name and address for the record when you come up to the podium. Again, your first speaker is Agda Piñon. Not present, Arturo Piñon. Not present, Ray Edwards.
Good morning, Mayor and Council members. My name is Ray Edwards. I reside at 3207 Keith Hill Drive, Dallas, Texas, in District 3, where Scott Griggs is representative. Congratulations on your appointment, sir. I'm here on behalf of the Dallas Fire Rescue Uniform Officers Association, and this is dealing with proposed schedule changes. Currently, we're working a 24-hour shift, but what we have been told is that it would change to a 12-hour or a 10-10-14 scenario. However, we want to advise you that 25 years ago, the city had switched from 12-hour shifts in which they went to 24 hours because it was more cost-effective. Plus, you kept us here for the ability to pull us in just in case there was an emergency or something like that. So we stay on the on-call status here 24 hours. And one of the things that's happening right now, we're handing out some handouts for you, is Houston has looked at the same thing. They've been working with 12-hour shifts, and Houston has said, you know what, we need to go to 24 hours. What we want to let you know is you invested in us 25 years ago, and you said, you know what, we'll go with a 24-hour shift. And by going in this 24-hour shift, it caused or provided cost effectiveness. With this cost effectiveness, it also gave the city the best fire dispatch system, and we are rated number one, basically, in the country. People come here to study this. For us to go back now to a 12-hour shift, we're going to look at different things now. When we go to 12 hours, we're going to have to go against a study that the city paid for. The city invested $500,000 in a company called Berkshire. Berkshire did a study and is an independent organization dealing with the fire service. When they came to fire dispatch, they looked at what we had, and what they said was, you know what? They spent a week and a half talking to us, looking at the efficiency and the proficiency of what we did, and they said, don't change a thing. If you go to different shifts or this different time schedule, you're going to cost the city more money, and you're probably going to lose efficiency. So because of public safety, we're here. We do a good job. Matter of fact, the city says, together we do it better. Well, in fire dispatch, together we do it best. And we got other cities in different places that are coming here that are trying to learn how we're doing things. So what we want to do is propose that, number one, we stay exactly where we're at, 24 hours on. It does not save the city any money going to a new 12-hour shift. Matter of fact, it's going to cost more, and it will cause problems because there will be shift differential pay and so forth. What happens is they had problems 25 years ago keeping people in fire dispatch, and what happened was they said, you know what, we've got to keep this wealth of knowledge of people that are here so that we'll have them able to speak to those that are in the environment in dispatch. So what happens is we don't know when we're going to have a tornado. We don't know when we're going to have hazardous material incidents. We don't know when there's going to be a terror attack. All we know is we're ready, and we have people that are ready to do so. So what happens is we as a resolution that we bring to you is simply this. Keep investing in us, and the return on investment that you've received so far with us is that you've got the best system in place right now in the city of Dallas, and I think you can give yourself a hand for that, and we will continue to give you the best that we have if you'll continue to invest in us. And that's what we ask for. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for all you do for the city of Dallas as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Christopher M. Davis. Christopher Davis.
I would just like to say that Ray spoke on behalf of all of us. Again, we just want to formally have it on the record that changing our shifts will cause a public safety risk. And we are asking that you table any line item as it pertains to fire rescue until we are able to give you the information that you need in order to make an informed choice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next speaker is Jake Vincent. Jake Vincent, not present. Black Hawk, not present.
Thank you all, by the way.
Trina Trish. Maybe you can speak.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the mayor.
Let's listen up.
Excuse me. Good afternoon. Welcome to the mayor and the new council as well. I'm Trina Trish, Dallas City. I have sent you all emails and different information. I have not received a response from that one individual. And let me also say this, that as I read on this agenda right here, that says the above schedule represents an estimate of the order for the indicated briefings and is subject to change at any time. Current agenda information may be obtained by calling 214-670-3100 during working hours. And those two statements, let me say, that is a case of taxation without representation. If you do not give proper advance notification to citizens of changes that must be administered, according to the First Amendment of the Constitution of America, it says that you shall make no law respecting the establishment of a religion, prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. The right of the people to peaceably assemble and now to petition the government for a redress of grievances. I on purpose asked to speak after lunch and be an end of the day speaker. Had I not been here, I would have lost that opportunity. Has organized crime taken over government? You bet it has. That's my point. The government is doing anything and everything it wants to do. It is submitting itself to those who pour into their campaigns and give to their public, private, whatever it is that they are putting on, and refusing the rights of public citizens to make comments and get results for the problems they are having in this city. Yes, I am Trina Trish. I went to a government agency only yesterday. I have my own business, Trina Trish Teaching Ministries. I'm in the process of getting two more, Trina Trish Handyman Service, Trina Trish Self-Publishing Company, because as I showed you, I do literary work. I have work published with the Library of Congress, also BMI. I've completed a book that I will publish myself. By the way, that's $16 per business. Anybody who wants to spot me on that can. I went to this business to take a course, and I don't have transportation. They have vouchers. You know, they refused to give me a voucher so I could attend the course this morning from 8 to 11:30, then make it here this afternoon to address the council. That's why we have unemployment. Not because people don't want to work, but because government isn't working for the people.
Thank you very much, Ms. Trish.
Your next speaker is B.M. Randolph. Not present. Gwen Wooten. Not present. Ricky Anderson. Not present. Sandra Crenshaw. Not present. That concludes the speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. Just from a process standpoint, we'll be going to an executive session. Then we, and I'm suggesting we stay here, so we'll clear the room. and then we will, when we come out, we will come open it back up and we'll close the meeting. So it is 11:36 on August 3rd. The City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551.071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters described on today's agenda. Marcus Wood et al. V. Deborah Watkins, City Secretary, City of Dallas. Heather Stewart v. City of Dallas. City of Dallas v. Museum of the American Railroad. Estimated time will be about 30 minutes. So with that being said, if we can clear the room, I appreciate it. Thank you.